After a rapid deployment worldwide over the past few years, 5G is expected to have reached a mature deployment stage to provide measurable improvement of network performance and user experience over its predecessors. Now, mobile operators are focusing on 5G deployment on a rapid scale and are expected to spread 5G services to a wider geographical area by 2025. Now, with a variety of use cases to support different industries and consumers, 5G will usher into a new era of applications and will come along with lots of opportunities, but I think as well as challenges. Hello everyone, welcome to the Analytics Insight podcast, where we talk about the ever-evolving tech space, and I'm your host, Priya Dayalani. Now, the 5G market is forecasted to reach around $667 billion by 2026. Now, with this, I think the demand for 5G monitoring is becoming critical to measure quality of experience provided to users. Now, why do we need to focus on quality of experience? Let's welcome Chip Strange, Chief Strategy Officer at Ookla, to talk around the progress of 5G. Hi, Chip. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm doing good too, Chip. It's a pleasure to have you with us on our podcast today. And of course, we're going to talk more around 5G. Of course, why do we need to measure the quality of experience? Why is it so critical nowadays and probably in the coming years ahead? But before we dive deeper into these aspects, I would like to know more about Ookla. So could you help us understand more about its organization? A pretty fascinating name. What does it exactly mean? And is there any particular specialization the company offers?
Yes. So Ookla is part of the connectivity division for Ziff Davis, which is a U.S.-based media company. And Ookla's key area of focus is around understanding the performance of fixed, mobile, and Wi-Fi network infrastructure, and then providing insights to our clientele, which spans fixed and mobile network operators, regulatory agencies, as well as anyone connected to the telecommunications ecosystem. And for our Wi-Fi optimization products, we focus those on the enterprise vertical, selling into anyone that's deploying small to massive Wi-Fi infrastructure. You would know Ookla through several of our brands. On the consumer side, our largest platform is Speedtest. So if any of you out there have ever interacted with and wanted to understand the performance of your local network, chances are you've either downloaded one of our applications or used speedtest.net to measure that. The Speedtest product is around taking the insights that are surfaced around the world and then providing information to our clients to help them understand the competitive environment, to help them understand the performance of their own network from the device's perspective, which is visibility that even with all the sophistication in from communication service providers in their networks, they don't necessarily have the visibility if they're not collecting that information from the device. We also, of course, have, because Speedtest exists in the consciousness of consumers, of the industry, and of course, the governments that regulate the industry, it has an outsized role as well around what Ookla and what Speedtest view as the performance of these networks creates the opportunity for the elite network providers to use our brand and the equity that we have earned over the years to demonstrate to the marketplace that an independent and unbiased view of network performance from Ookla has judged them to have the superior network performance depending on the relevant KPI. Speedtest business is, as I said, the largest of our platforms. It creates insights in virtually every market in the world, and we're very proud to have grown that capability over the last 17 years. Another consumer-facing product is DownDetector. So DownDetector looks at not so much network performance in the same way that Speedtest does, but it looks... So DownDetector is very concerned with issues and disruptions to internet connected services. So we think about not just the last mile networks, but about banking networks, about airlines, energy providers, anything that that could be disrupted that impacts a consumer or impacts enterprises that people want to maintain monitoring of. So for us, the business model is more around real-time issues that are occurring and being able to, in real time, ensure that our customers have visibility to those issues. For communication service providers, this is especially important because, you know, candidly, they tend to get blamed for everything. And so we all know that if your favorite streaming television service goes down, it could be the last mile network, right? But it could also be a CDN that's fallen over temporarily. It could be some other issue with the content delivery system itself. But the network operators tend to get blamed for these. So what we provide with Down Detector is visibility for consumers as well as for enterprises on what is the nature of those disruptions so that they can better manage their own communications with their customers and ultimately get the services back online as quickly as possible. Another area in the network performance side is our RootMetrics product line, which is a controlled testing capability. Think of this as drive and walk testing. And so we have that as another measurement platform that is valuable because for all of the amazing aspects of crowdsourced data through speed test, there is a limiting factor on how much information you can collect from a consumer mobile device. And so through control testing, which is deeper layer three, I won't get into all of the network geekiness in me. I won't go down that path, but ultimately it provides network performance and radio engineers with much deeper insights about the drivers of the performance of the network. And then finally, with Ekahau as our Wi-Fi optimization, measurement optimization and planning tool. This is, again, a service and a product that is largely delivered for network owners themselves. So, you know, everything from a college campus to a small business to exceedingly complex industrial manufacturing type of business that's reliant on having secure and reliable Wi-Fi performance. Ekahau is the best-in-class service toward those ends. So those are the four pillars of what Ookla is. And if you look at that in totality, Ookla ultimately cares deeply about the connectivity that humans, businesses, and machines have to the internet and ensuring that those measurements are surfaced in a way that's actionable for the owners of those networks and impactful for consumers who are using our tools to just understand their connectivity environment.
Well, that's a great overview of your organization and its core specialization. And it's always fascinating to hear how companies are carving out the niche and making an impact in their industry. But what's particularly interesting is how the landscape has evolved over time and how businesses like yours have had to adapt to changing market demands or technological advancements and, for that matter, even customer expectations. So understanding the journey and vision of a company can really give us insight into the long-term goals and how it plans to innovate in the future. So with that in mind, I would love to hear more about your role within the company, Chip. Like, what has your journey been like and how have you contributed to driving the organization's mission forward?
Yeah, so as the Chief Strategy Officer, my remit is fairly broad. I'm responsible ultimately for our mergers and acquisition program. Over the last several years, we have been quite acquisitive, and we're lucky to have an investor in Ziff Davis who provides us access to capital to try to grow and innovate our business as aggressively as possible. I came into this business after spending roughly 13 years inside of a fixed and mobile operator in the United States. Then I went into the network analytics side via a company called Mosaic Solutions. And Mosaic was actually Ookla's first acquisition back in 2018. And that's when I came into the organization as I represented, obviously, the sell side aspect of that transaction. I'm also, though, responsible for our government and industry affairs. So what this means is, as we engage with governments around the world, myself and members of my team provide a support infrastructure to our client-facing teams, so that we can ensure that the lessons learned in one part of the world can be spread to other parts of the world and obviously to provide value to our clients. Industry affairs is another area that I have responsibility for. So this is our relationships with standards bodies, our relationships with, you know, domestic or regional industry associations. And it also includes, as part of that, our enterprise content. So if you haven't taken a look at ukla.com and all of the content that we create, we have a research and analysis function that provides content out to the marketplace that helps ensure that the insights that we can provide are communicated effectively, but also because advocacy is a key part of our focus. We believe fundamentally, and I certainly believe this, that UCLA has a role to play, even with our relatively small business. We have a role to play in helping to drive public policies that can effectuate better outcomes, not only for consumers in these markets, but for the industries that are operating in them, and certainly for the operators that are creating and providing services and networks for consumers and enterprises in those markets. And so because of that, we also have an altruistic data licensing program that we call UCLA for Good. This is a program that that we built inside of the strategy team several years ago. And it serves as a mechanism for us to provide data, in some cases complementary, for researchers, nonprofits, NGOs, economic development organizations, et cetera, with access to some of our data so that their outputs are better informed. It's a fairly broad remit that I have. And when it comes to the contributions, you know, we've made 9 acquisitions over the last 6 or 7 years or so. I've been spearheading certainly several of those. And ultimately my job is, I think, twofold. It's to ensure that UCLA has an extremely strong strategic posture, while also protecting the enormous brand equity that we have generated. And then finally, to ensure that the investments that we're making are consistent with those strategic aims and respect our position in the market.
Well, that's a pretty impressive profile. And I think it's really great to hear about your role and contributions and, you know, the impact that you're making within the company. And I think moving ahead, your role or your part in the organization will definitely play an important role in shaping the vision and driving more innovation across UCLA. So I think the promise of 5G has captured the attention of business leaders, policymakers, and even the media. But how much of that promise is likely to be realized anytime soon? Now, with the first true high-band 5G networks already live, we set out to take a realistic view of how and where connectivity should be deployed and what it can enable over the next 10 years. But I think 5G is not appearing in isolation. How do you think the 5G deployment, the progress has taken or has evolved so far? And what are the certain factors do you think has influenced its pace and speed?
Yeah, so I would say that the growth of 5G network deployments has been quite impressive. We've seen certainly in markets that are on the higher end of the socioeconomic spectrum, you're certainly seeing massive networks that are being built to provide widespread 5G coverage. Now, there are, of course, different types of 5G networks, right, between standalone and non-standalone networks. Those decisions around the types of technology that are deployed are obviously up to the individual operator, or in some cases, the regulatory authority might have control of what technology gets deployed across which spectrum, right? But fundamentally, I think the networks themselves have advanced very well. They provide certainly a higher level of network performance. They can be more flexibly managed to deliver, lower latency, to be able to manage network slices in ways that prior technologies have not. But ultimately, I would say that the business model side of 5G network expansion has been more challenging, and I think that's true regardless of the type of network that we're talking, or the type of market that we're talking about. Now, in developing markets, you know, the expansion, the availability and expansion of networks, you know, 5G networks has been slower. This is not, you know, this is not a surprise, right? This is the, it can be a consistent theme as new technologies expand. Costs are a real challenge here. And in many cases, the jurisdiction does not have the spectrum available to be able to fully maximize the benefits of these types of networks. So it's a more difficult environment in developing markets. And of course, you know, over time, as networks get built, the cost of the networks themselves goes down, the cost of device development goes down. And so the developing markets can catch up and catch up to the more advanced markets over time. I would say too that, you know, spectrum policy, I cannot reinforce enough, is a massive issue. You know, mobile operators have limited resources. They have in many cases limited access to the spectrum resources that are available in other markets. And so, you know, it's a complicated sort of set of decisions that have to be made, in part by the regulators, by the operators, and ultimately by consumers as well. Are they going to be willing to pay a higher price, not only for the services that are delivered across the network, but the devices that may be available as well? So 5G smartphones, they need to become more affordable. They are not in reach of lower income consumers, and that has impacted the adoption rate as well. Now, there are some really interesting markets as well, though. So one example is India, where, you know, Jio and Airtel have been very aggressive in deploying 5G markets. Jio has committed to a full standalone 5G rollout, focused on enterprise features and advanced use cases for enterprises. And Airtel has adopted a non-standalone approach that prioritizes rapid coverage expansion by leveraging its existing 4G infrastructure. Neither of those decisions is wrong, and each obviously is fulfilling a strategic priority for those respective operators. But we've seen really, really nice performance and a massive amount of networks that are being deployed across India. And I think that their leadership should be commended, not just from the operator community, but by pressing into the regulatory environment to ensure that more spectrum is made available, and that anything that can drive down the cost of devices is evaluated so that we can get more people interacting with these networks that have cost the operator so much money to deploy.
Well, I think that's a really a great breakdown of how 5G deployment has progressed so far. It's pretty clear that while this technology holds immense potential, that the pace of its rollout is influenced by a variety of factors, whether it's infrastructure, regulators, or even the overall economic conditions for that matter. Now, moving ahead, I think when we're talking about 5G connectivity, or how we as humans or businesses want to be, connected with the internet, I think the internet has transformed from being infrastructure-oriented, such as, we had Ethernet, routers, and computers, and now it is all business-oriented, where we're talking about Facebook, Google, and, Amazon. Yeah. So the reason for this shift also is, I think, because of a lot of factors. We are demanding high computational power. We are demanding more storage, and of course more communication, I believe. Now, moreover, I think after the inception of a mobile technology and existing computing models such as cloud has to undergo several modifications to deliver the a very quality driven or a specified quality of experience and meeting the demands of consumers that want a particular level of quality of experience. So when we're talking about 5G, besides speed and latency, like we discussed, so what factors define the overall quality of experience for consumers when they're using 5G?
Yeah, so part of the remit that Ookla has is, of course, helping consumers and enterprises understand the performance of these networks and how that network performance impacts consumer experiences. So although we certainly have speed test is much more than just speed. we have an array of different KPIs that are produced from our diverse data collection platforms, and we use those to help everyone in the marketplace understand and benchmark the performance of these networks against each other, whether they be 4G, whether they be standalone 5G, non-standalone 5G, 3G, et cetera. When we think about network performance, and what I mean by that is more traditional quality of service, right? Yes, speed, latency, those factors are an excellent proxy for overall network performance, but they are not the only proxies, because at the end of the day, a consumer ultimately doesn't really care whether they're receiving 50 megabits per second or 100 megabits per second. What they care about is interacting with the devices and the networks in a way that gets them the content that they're seeking. And so what we've done is continue to innovate around expanding the remit of speed test to include measuring against content delivery networks, measure against web technologies, web conferencing technologies, testing against the internet itself, of course, as well as video delivery systems. Because, you know, consumers ultimately just want to have confidence that they have seamless, reliable, and consistent connectivity experiences, whether they're at home, whether they're at the office, whether they're in transit, or whether they're on holiday, where so many more of us are working when we're on holiday, right? So, so to respect that expectation, we've continued to evolve our approach, and so we now have the ability and share insights not just around what is the actual speed, but what is the condition of the radio network itself? Is the radio network engineered in such a way that it is as efficient as possible? Is an individual network or a part of the network more or less performant against these other types of services that consumers are ultimately interacting with? So, you know, again, speed is still an excellent proxy, but we've expanded our measurement technologies as well as the insights that are produced from them to deliver a range of metrics and insights and help inform our enterprise customers and the consumers themselves as to whether the networks that they're interacting with are capable of delivering the service that the consumer expects. So we're certainly not abandoning speed as a metric. But we are adding many more dimensions to make our offerings and the information that we provide much more valuable to everyone.
Well, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, because when you're talking about quality of experience, I think it goes beyond just fast connection. You know, it's about how seamlessly and reliably users can interact with digital services in real world scenario. So I think, you know, eventually, I think as an end user, I would expect not just speed from 5G, but I would expect a network that I can probably rely on or trust, I would say. I want to shift the gears of the conversation to another topic now. Extreme weather is intensifying, grabbing the media headlines and pushing the limits of traditional building design, construction regulations and urban planning rules. Now, communities worldwide are recognizing that standard approaches are no longer sufficient to address rising challenges that include extreme heat, high winds, flooding, severe cold, and whatnot. So in response, numerous initiatives and programs are emerging that prioritize community input to shape new rules, regulations, and, you know, planning standards for urban development. So how do you think that the crowdsourced data can help cities make informed decisions about the urban planning?
So one way, there's a lot there. So let me try to break it down. So from a municipal perspective, right? And whether that is a small city, a large city, you know, a county or province, right? Ultimately, the policymakers that are there are not experts in necessarily in the telecommunications market, right? They have to be experts in lots of things, but that's probably not one of them. So what crowdsourced data can provide is a nice overall benchmark that's simple for a policymaker to understand, that can give them a good view on what the ground truth is around these networks, that can help them prioritize expansion of the networks in certain communities that may be underserved, but also can help them, it can help validate what the operator community is telling them when they're going in front of zoning boards and trying to get permits for expanding the network access. Because, you know, a lot of communities in the world that love to complain about access to mobile networks, especially newer technology mobile networks like 5G, but then don't want to allow for the construction of the infrastructure itself to deliver those services, right? So we provide, everything from the generalized view that shows a benchmark of the networks all the way down to super granular engineering grade insights for those people that can consume them. So with respect to the indoor situation, this is especially difficult for an array of different reasons. One of the big barriers to indoor network expansion is cost, of course. The operators themselves struggle with how to manage their capital and operating expenses, of course. And so what we do is surface information about, especially around the radio network performance, that can help an operator identify parts of the network that can be improved based on just better engineering, okay? Just turning the knobs differently on the networks to reduce interference between different cells, overshooting of networks that can ultimately provide better services, especially in an indoor environment where, depending on the spectrum that's being deployed and the type of network that's riding that spectrum, getting inside of buildings can be exceedingly difficult because, as you rightly pointed out, the construction requirements are going up. You know, these things are big, giant concrete buildings that are covered in glass, right? Those things all make it very difficult for radio networks to penetrate inside of those buildings. And obviously, no one can afford to provide, you know, a distributed antenna system or a neutral network inside of every single building, right? That's just not feasible. So, you know, this is an important part of our capability to try to help the clients understand what the in-building network performance is. And then, you know, more broadly speaking, at a sort of global economic development level, that's where our Ookla for Good data has come in so many times, where, you know, we're helping to inform economic development organizations with ground truth information about networks that then they can use as part of their recommendations as they are looking at different sort of funding options for developing countries, as well as just understanding, like from the OECD's perspective, just understanding the performance of networks, you know, across multiple jurisdictions in the world. And finally, I'll just say that, you know, there's a resiliency aspect of what Ookla provides as well, especially on the down detector side. So when there is some sort of crisis, whether it be human created or some sort of natural disaster, we are there not only to provide information about how the networks are responding to those crises, but also, again, how the services that are connected to these networks are affected by it as well. And so that's a layer of information that that we can provide to help people that are on the ground dealing with the crisis really pinpoint and understand where the networks are available and where they're not available, so that they can understand that before they deploy humans and infrastructure to try to, to try to respond to the crisis.
Right. Thank you for sharing, a couple of examples and the different aspects as to how we can, use this crowdsourced data to aid in urban planning. Having said that, one last question for you, Chip. How do you see the role of 5G-powered data in shaping the future of urban cities?
So there are an array of different ways, right? So there are fundamental use cases that are reliant on extremely fast, low latency networks to support them, right? An easy example, of course, is autonomous vehicles, which are beginning to have some viability in the marketplace. If you think about all the sophistication and the intelligence inside of these vehicles, at some point in time, the vehicle needs to ask a question. And when it asks that question, it needs to have a response back in, you know, very, very quickly, in milliseconds, right? So that's one example where I think you're going to start to see 5G specific networks be able to provide some benefits. I'd also say too, that when we're thinking about industrial applications, 5G networks are a big part of that, where you can have a combination at an industrial facility of both, public, or what I would consider public 5G networks, right? Those that are provided by the operators that we all are doing business with personally, private 5G wireless, where the company itself maybe deploying, acquiring the spectrum and deploying the networks only for their specific use. And then, of course, in addition to Wi-Fi on unlicensed spectrum, right? So, you know, I'd say that it's a technological innovation that can benefit cities in multiple ways. I think demonstrating clearly that a city has a commitment to providing highly performant network experiences, whether that be across mobile networks or fixed or fiber networks, is an important differentiation factor. And the higher quality networks that are available in those communities can also attract the type of talent that's going to be necessary for expanding the economic impacts of a particular community in a positive way. And so it fundamentally is another level of competitiveness that City A can have versus City B, if they adopt policies that help provide enough access and incentives for the expansion of the networks. And then the other thing I'll say too, that's it's related, the biggest thing that municipalities can do is to try to reduce the barriers for the people that are trying to deploy these networks, right? And, you know, zoning and permitting is a huge challenge. It's especially challenging as well from an indoor perspective. And, you know, we see countless examples where, whether it be a national regulatory authority or a local government, that candidly is standing in the way of the expansion of these networks. And I believe that is impacting the economic viability and growth of their communities if they are intransigent about allowing the people that are looking to invest infrastructure. And that's a very important thing to flag. These are infrastructure investments, right? It's about the future, and it's about preparing a community to take advantage of technologies it's going to help the community grow. And we need to do collectively a better job around the world of having governments streamline the permitting and zoning processes so we can get these networks to more people.
Right. I think the expansion of 5G applications to support various use cases applied in a different industry verticals have created never-ending demand for 5G monitoring. And the revolutionary path towards 5G requires operators identify new architectures with a significant data plan to be tested, focusing more on the latency, bandwidth, and even the throughput efficiency. So, well, thank you so much, Chip. It was a pleasure having you with us on a podcast today. And thank you for helping us understand that the new developments that have streamlined with 5G technology, they promise to build a very strong competitive business surroundings across various industries, and they kind of transform the way we are connecting with the people and doing business in the near future. So thank you so much for your insights. It was a pleasure chatting with you.
It's been a privilege. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Chip. So this is for our listeners. Stay tuned for upcoming podcasts, and you can view all our previous podcasts on Spotify and other leading platforms. Thank you.